Okay, and welcome back. Hour number two already. Zoom. Okay, there are a lot of things to offer up for everyone listening tonight, many different topics, and I'm trying to find one right now that's important. Hold on one second here. Let's see. I think I have it right here. Maybe. We're going to talk about prions again, because it's very, very important. This is an issue that is obviously growing. It is spreading its wings, so to speak, and so on. It's there. This whole thing goes back to 1969. And I first found this document many years ago, and I put together a book on AIDS called AIDS Exposed. And it was quite an interesting compendium of material. I didn't necessarily research and write all of it, but it was assembled and edited, and it, at the time, really offered up an awful lot of reality when you were trying to figure out what the AIDS fear and AIDS fright was all about. And it was a big deal. And then we had the bovine spongiform encephalopathy crisis starting out in the UK, and it did migrate over here, but it was quashed by the mega-billion-dollar beef industry here. We didn't hear much about it. We'll talk more about that a little later as well. Are you there, partner?
I am here. Happy Monday.
Well, same to you, I guess. I don't know. These weekends just evaporate. Crazy.
Yeah, they do. It's hard to distinguish one day from the next.
The news never stops. Now, what I want to do, if I can, I've got the document up here. It's a transcript of it. 1969... The United States House of Representatives had a hearing. It was a committee, and I've got the actual transcript of it. If any of you remember back in the early days of the AIDS crisis, Dr. Robert Strecker, MD, stood up and told the truth, and he said, look, this is a man-made organism. People were trying to figure out where it came from, and Bob Strecker, who was a friend, was on the program and told it straight. He said, look, if you come across somebody who's in a wheelchair, he's got no arms and no legs, but he's dressed up in a tuxedo, he had to have help, didn't he? That didn't just happen. That was his analogy to making the artificiality of HIV clear, and he did. He and his brother Theodore Strecker, Ted Strecker, who was an insurance professional, was looking into actuarial tables and so forth, was murdered to try to shut Robert Strecker up because he was laying it all out there. So here that brings us back to the Defense Department, the DOD, appropriations hearing for 1969, which was actually for the fiscal year of 1970. And someone was asking for money. Somebody from the DOD who went there, the names are really irrelevant. The guy's name was MacArthur. He's DOD, and the committee chairman was Mr. Sykes. And the idea was very simple. Here's the quote. Synthetic biological agents. Well, just for fun, what is the current synthetic biological agent we've been talking about, which started out in viral form and now has transmitted itself into the vax form? This is all synthetic. Synthetic means man-made, okay? It's not organic. This is construct. This is synthetic. So, Mr. Sykes makes a statement about synthetic biological agents. There are two things about the biological agent field I would like to mention. One is the possibility of technological surprise. Molecular biology is a field that is advancing very rapidly, and eminent biologists believe that within a period of 5 to 10 years, this is 1969, it would be possible to produce a synthetic biological agent, an agent that does not naturally exist and for which no natural immunity could have been acquired. And Mr. Sykes goes on to Mr. MacArthur of the DOD, are we doing any work in that field? MacArthur says, we are not. Mr. Sykes, why not? Lack of money or lack of interest? And Dr. MacArthur says, certainly no lack of interest. Mr. Sykes, would you provide for our records information on what would be required, what the advantages of such a program would be, the time and the cost involved? And DOD's MacArthur says, we will be happy to. The information follows. And he goes through blah, blah, blah. And one of the things he says is kind of interesting. He says, all biological agents up to the present time are representatives of naturally occurring disease and are thus known by scientists throughout the world. They are easily available to qualified scientists for research, either for offensive or defensive purposes. And then he comes through with that kicker. Within the next 5 to 10 years, it would probably be possible to make a new infective microorganism, a synthetic new infective microorganism, 1969, which would differ in certain important aspects from any known disease-causing organisms. Most important of these is that it might be refractory, in other words, very negative, to the immunological and therapeutic processes upon which we depend to help maintain our relative freedom from infectious disease. Number 3, a research program to explore the feasibility of this could be completed in approximately 5 years for a total cost of $10 million. Well, just to wrap it up real quickly, MacArthur got his money, the DOD got the money, and the DOD is still at it. Who owns the so-called vaccine now? The Department of Defense. It's a bioweapon. They've been in the bioweapons business since before 1969 when they asked for $10 million to formally create a new synthetic bioweapon. They did, and it was one that would destroy the human immunological and therapeutic processes upon which people depend to maintain good health. Okay? So this is old stuff. They've been at this for a long time, and the proof is right here in this congressional record I'm reading from. So nothing should surprise any of you about this, really. It shouldn't be a surprise.
I agree, and you know, that led into the whole HIV saga.
Right. Well, they created HIV from this $10 million, released
exactly.
It in 1976, 1976-77. They released it on two fronts. The platform in Africa was the so-called smallpox vaccine program to eradicate smallpox. But it didn't. It was actually just a mechanism for injecting HIV into Africans. That's why until this day, 30% of adult Africans and most children in that group, 30%, have AIDS right now. They still have it. It became endemic to the population. And the other half of the deployment of that $10 million synthetic biological agent that they got permission to build in 1969 was in 1976-77, the hepatitis B vaccine program here in the U.S. The hepatitis B vaccine program was restricted. I couldn't get a shot then. Anyone else around couldn't get. The only people who were given those shots were, guess who? Active homosexuals who were not passive in their lifestyle. They wanted very active homosexuals who got the HIV, hepatitis B vaccine, which was laced with HIV. That's how they spread it in the American homosexual community. So you had two thrusts, one in Africa, hidden in the smallpox vax, and one over here, hidden in the hepatitis B vax, and they laced HIV in Africa and here in the homosexual community as well. That's how that happened.
That's right.
You knew all this.
Well, I read that book by Edward Hooper called The River.
Good book.
A number of years ago, and that was quite an interesting. I mean, it's a good sized book with a lot of research in it, and you know, it detailed a lot of this.
I'll try and post this later tonight if you want to see it. The Congressional Record, it's right there. Everything I've mentioned, and this is where it came from. You see, it's not a mystery. They even named it a synthetic, and they named the target the human immunological function. They wanted to break down our functionality in terms of bipedal humanoids who had a viable way to protect themselves from a disease. The immunology was the target.
Yeah.
It's still the target. Nothing's changed.
That's right. And, you know, the whole Peter Duisberg thing was a cover-up.
I watched
him. He wrote that book to...
Yeah.
Cast aspersions on you know, the fact that this was a deliberately designed bioweapon, and he tried to make it seem that these things were just exosomes and that the virus was some sort of endogenous retrovirus that became activated due to a degenerate lifestyle.
Did you ever see him? I went to see him. He gave a lecture at UC Santa Barbara where I was, and I went to see him, and it was all I could do to keep from laughing. He was very slick. But it was a blatant effort to cover this all up. Blatant.
But he was very much involved in the bioweapons program.
Yeah. Well, he told young people, don't worry. Go out and have sex, basically, is what he said. You're not going to get it. Never mind. Don't worry. It's not transmissible. It's nothing. Don't worry. And young people, of course, that was music to their ears. They wanted to go out and have fun. So he became a minor celebrity on the basis of hormones of college students. That's what it was. Crazy. All right. Now, we have other things to discuss here. The whole issue that we talked about last time, prions, we're going to talk about that again tonight, because there's more and more evidence that prions, which lead to CJD, which is an absolutely 100% fatal, incurable destruction of the human brain, right, by... What? Not by virus, not by bacteria, but by proteins. Okay? CJD, the human prion protein. Now, we think there may be some evidence to suggest that since these shots were rolled out, that this prion protein may be a turbo-style prion protein. Most prion diseases take about 10 years to show up. We're finding people now firmly diagnosed with CJD within a year or two after being injected. That's not encouraging.
Much sooner than that.
Well, I'm being general. You go ahead. Take it.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the paper that was published by Luc Montagnier and Jean-Claude Perez before Luc Montagnier passed away. And they were investigating these, you know, sudden cases of CJD that were occurring in close proximity to the time these people had received a vaccination. And it didn't seem to matter which brand of vaccine they got, if it was a gene transfection type, either mRNA or one of the adenoviral vectored vaccines, they were at risk of developing this sudden onset CJD. And I think the shortest time from diagnosis to death was 2 weeks.
Right.
And I am continuing to see those types of reports in a couple of these groups that I've been monitoring. So how do you interpret that? You know, we don't know if these people were already harboring or already incubating this disease, and this just pushed them...
Right.
Into
That's
high
right.
gear.
That's fair. The suggestion here is that the prion protein is now being somehow kicked into a hyperdrive. You get a shot, and 2 weeks later you're diagnosed with CJD, or a month later, or 2 months later. That's astonishing. And it's not a young people's disease, usually.
No, and it used to be fairly rare. But even prior... to the pandemic, it was noted that CJD the incidence of it had been trending upwards. And now last week I mentioned that, you know, there could be environmental factors that could explain that. You know, maybe what came to mind initially was just, you know, the fact that we're so saturated in these non-native chaotic electromagnetic frequencies now that it's, you know, one of the most susceptible parts of the body is the nervous system. So neurodegeneration in general is on the rise. But in talking to Jeff today, he mentioned that we can't ignore the prevalence of mad cow disease in the general cattle population that they're not being truthful about.
They've been lying since BSE broke out in the UK, if that's really where it did break out. It seems to have been more pronounced there. Let me just speak to that a little bit. Those of you who have been with the program for a long time, remember how thoroughly it was covered here in those early years, the late 90s, early 2000s, when Patty Doyle was here. We were on this thing very, very heavily. And Eric is right. BSE never went away. And when it first came out as the identified cause of people in the UK, younger people, who were dying of this horrible brain deterioration. It was called bovine spongiform encephalopathy, BSE. And then they began to call it TSE, transmissible, right? Spongiform encephalopathy, because it was being transmitted from cattle to people. If you ate the wrong piece of the cow, you could get TSE and you're dead. But TSE is... It never went away. That was the problem. They first said you can only get TSE from a cow if you eat part of the cow's brains. And cattle brains actually were in butcher shops here and there, and they were trying to hang their hat on that. They had to back off on that. And then they said, well, if it's in any of the neurology of the cow, the spinal column or the brain, you might possibly be able to get it that way. And then they had to back off from that. And then they said, well, we have found it now in some of the meat of the cow, so it might be good not to eat, you know, some of this part of the cow or that part of the... Ultimately, of course, the whole lie just collapsed, and they had to admit that these prion proteins, BSE in cows, were everywhere. Everywhere there was blood, there were prion proteins in cows who were infected with this stuff. This is infectious prion proteins. And so people were then... freaked out, and the British beef industry took a big hit, and then they had to try to cover it all. Well, we've got it all under control, and it's gone now. Bullshit. Never went away.
Yeah, I you know, you said you had that guest on that.
Yeah. Let me tell that story.
Yeah,
I looked into this. At first, the British tried to say, well, it's gone. Don't worry about it. It's not being reported anymore. We're not seeing it. We can't find it in any tests. Lying sons of bitches, excuse me. They were lying. They do nothing else but lie. So over here in the U.S., we had zero cases, none. And then one day, a story broke, and it said, first case of mad cow disease found in the United States. And it was reported at a small slaughterhouse in the state of Washington. And I got on the phone, and I called, and I found that out to be not just the slaughterhouse was reporting, it was one of the employees. And I actually got in touch with that employee and brought him on the program. You can hear it in the archives, you can find it. And I asked the guy, I said, well, tell me about this cow that came in. And he said, well, it was on a truck and it couldn't walk. It was staggering around and it just eventually hit the ground. And I said, well, what did you do? Well, we got a backhoe and we pulled it, we put a chain around it, pulled it in, and I said, and then what? Well, we slaughtered it. And that's how it was found in the meat. That cow was slaughtered, and it came from that slaughterhouse, and the guy was very upfront about it. Now, he had been fired since mentioning the fact that they had a cow in there that had BSE. And that's where that report came from. And he was on the program, and I asked him straight away, I said, is this the first one you've ever seen? If it's staggering and falling down and showing all the signs of bovine spongiform encephalopathy in cows? And he said, no, Jeff, we see these all the time. And I was speechless. I was stunned. In other words, mad cow disease has been in the beef industry here since way back, at least those days and probably considerably before that. And people who have developed CJD or mad cow, in all likelihood, have come into contact with that disease from eating tainted beef. Now, tainted beef, if you eat a Big Mac, that patty, unless it's a double, but whatever, each patty of meat has meat from over 500 different cattle in it. That's a conservative estimate. They mix it together, grind it up, and if just one of those cows had mad cow prions in it, you could easily eat it. And no, it's not going to be neutralized by cooking it on a grill. Tell them about the temperature variance.
Well, this is the problem with these types of proteins, is that it's almost impossible to denature them.
Kill them.
Right.
Kill them.
Right. So, as we were saying on Friday, some of this medical surgical instruments that they depend on autoclaving to sterilize them, if those instruments have been in contact with somebody who had or is harboring, incubating these prion diseases, the prions will not be destroyed by that autoclaving process. And now autoclaving is using both heat in the form of steam and pressure to destroy pathogens, but it's not effective for prion proteins, which in that general class is also amyloids.
Amyloids causing ALS.
Well, ALS or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, I mean, these are
right.
all protein
Several.
Misfolding diseases that involve these aggregates of misfolded proteins.
Yep.
So, you know, we're looking at a potential real catastrophe here if, in fact, everyone who's been injected is incubating prion disease. Go ahead.
Here's why we think that's a possibility, if not a probability. The spike protein has seven sequences, or let's imagine spots on it, areas on it. And when that protein is cleaved, those seven sequences are exposed to all the proteins in the blood. Now, this spike protein is moving along in the blood, or it's anchored to the side on the cell, and the blood's going past it. It's got seven sequences in its makeup that when any protein bumps into those seven sequences, that protein will be misfolded. One of those sequences is specifically designed for human prion proteins to be misfolded. So
That's
you've
right.
got, and another one is for the
amyloid
proteins to be misfolded.
Alzheimer's, yeah.
You got and Parkinson's, yeah, you got it. And so these misfolded proteins will go over the blood, wherever the blood goes, and they go right into the brain, and they set up shop there. And they begin to cause other proteins to misfold. It's a cascade.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's in the blood and you don't want to get it, you don't want to be exchanging bodily fluids with anybody else. You just don't want to be doing that. Remember,
no,
this species.
Go ahead.
Go. No, you go.
I was just going to say that these prion proteins are found in bodily fluids.
All body fluids.
And that would include, you know, urine as well. I know there's this fad right now of drinking your own urine. I'm not so sure you want to do that.
Tears, saliva, and it's in saliva. So 50%
yeah.
of the people walking and talking have blood or blood products in their saliva at all times, ready to exchange with somebody else because of poor gum health, gingivitis. They're bleeding gums. You brush your teeth and see the pink toothbrush, you get it. And if you brush your teeth or kiss somebody vigorously, 90% of the people will show blood or blood products in and proteins in their saliva. That's how you swap it through saliva.
Well, and it's also, we have research indicating that the prion protein has been found in the skin of people infected with this.
We have photographs of that now. This is not a good thing. So if it's on the skin of your forearm or any part of your body, and it can be if you're infected, these prion proteins will manifest at the skin level and be sloughed off, right? Because the skin is always sloughing off cells. That's called dust. If you examine household dust, most of it is skin cells.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So you're shedding skin cells from your body, which can have prion proteins in them. And also, when you're exhaling or spewing any body fluids through a sneeze or a cough, you are walking around that house or that office, and you might as well be a chemtrail spraying plane. You're spraying aerosols wherever you go, or dropping them in terms of dust and cells from your skin. It's in the air. These things blow around all over the place. You've gone up to a table and run your finger in dust and seen how it's laying horizontally on everything. Go ahead.
There are no shortage of people now who have become sensitized to this protein, and they can go into a living space, working space, where there have been vax people and begin reacting to it. You know, there have been reports of people staying in hotel rooms that were occupied by vaxxed people, and, you know, they're sick the next day.
So we think that vaxxed people are not only dishing off spike proteins, but they could be dishing off any kind of protein you can imagine. That's just the nature of proteins. They're everywhere.
Yeah, you know, everybody is constantly, you know, losing or shedding their own proteins into the environment. I mean, how do you think a dog tracks a person? What are they sniffing? Right?
Yep. Proteins.
I mean, you're leaving traces of yourself behind. Anyway, I forgot what I was going to say.
here's one. Okay, these proteins are in saliva. Count on it. Does everyone have infectious prion proteins? Not necessarily. But how many people have been vaxxed in this country now? We used to go with 70, 80%. Now I have a figure now that's very credible at 92% of the people here who have taken at least one shot. So I don't know the answer. All we can do is guess and make the best guess we can. But if these prion proteins, right, and spike proteins, and maybe mRNA, right, and maybe liquid nanoparticles, maybe, and maybe some of these fragmented pieces of DNA are in saliva. We don't know. You got 400 billion pieces of them, that's the top end, in an injection, and it goes into your blood, and your blood goes into your saliva, and you kiss somebody, and you swap bodily fluids. What are you swapping? I'm not trying to scare anybody here, but it's the truth, and they won't tell you. So you might want to be real careful about, you know, who you consort with.
You know, the whole point of the injections was to turn human beings into disease vectors, and they've done that. What they're shedding in terms of proteins, it's anybody's guess, because now as more information comes out, it's looking like people's cells were not able to read the mRNA correctly because of these frame shifts due to the pseudouridine. So we don't even know what are they producing?
Mm-mm.
You know, people who have been sickened by shedding, some of them have gone and had an antibody test for specifically for that spike protein or the S1 portion of the spike protein, and they're negative. But they're definitely sick, so what was shedded onto them? Something
right.
Other than spike, it appears. Not everybody generates antibodies, you know, when they're exposed to the virus in any case, you know, because it should be if you're in tip-top health, a T-cell mediated response where you don't need the antibodies to neutralize the virus. The T-cells take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could measure that. They used to have a test called, I think it was T-Detect, and which would show, it would measure the response of your T-cells to the virus, the antigens on the virus, but they did away with it, and I'm not quite sure why. I mean, there's so much focus on antibodies as the, you know, gold measure
standard.
Of the gold standard of immunity. And it's the wrong response for this virus or any coronavirus. Usually when you have antibodies to the coronavirus, it either means you're chronically infected with it or you have a defective T-cell response.
Remember always, it's in all body fluids. Body fluids are a remarkable transmission vectors of all kinds of things. And Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD, is a killer. It's caused by prion proteins. Bovine spongiform encephalopathy, caused by prion proteins that are transmissible to people through beef consumption. Now, this is a real big issue. CJD victims, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease victims, who have prions in their brain, in their liver, those prions can attack any organ, but they do like to go into the brain for some reason. The question is, if people are shedding through all body fluids, sex can kill, we know that, sweat, tears, whatever. Urine, these urine drinkers are nuts. That's insane. But, you know, drink up, have fun. I just don't know. Are CJD victims shedding prion proteins or not? We have pictures now of these proteins in the skin, on the outside of the skin, of people who have CJD. What is that saying? I'm not sure.
Well,
we don't know yet.
Just history. People who have been caregivers, people who have lived in the same household as people who have CJD. It doesn't appear that casual or even close contact is really enough to transmit the disease.
But that was before the vax came out.
Well, this is something different. We're at the mercy of time to reveal the full extent of what this does.
Right. Right. We seem to have turbo infectious prions now causing CJD in people. If you get shot up and 2 weeks later you're diagnosed with CJD, that's unprecedented.
Yeah.
Or 2 months or 6 months. It takes 9 years on average for an adult to manifest diagnosable Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Now, in France, there was a story the other day that Erica found that they have now banned temporarily all prion protein research in France. Why?
Yeah, that was from 2021.
Understood. But something happened to cause France to block it. And there's the story about that is, I guess, that young woman, 23, 24 years old, that allegedly in 2021 caused that. So in other words, there's a real awareness of the danger of prion proteins that was manifested in 2021 by France, which banned it, all research in it. And it had to do with a young lady who was, I think, 23, working in the lab, and she basically stabbed herself with one of the sharp instruments, like a needle stick, and was fine. It did draw blood, went through two layers of gloves, and 9 years later, though, she's dead of CJD from the prions that she got through the needle stick or sharp
implement
stick.
It's no joke. These things are uniformly fatal.
Yeah. And then, of course,
we shouldn't overlook this epidemic of CWD, chronic wasting disease, that's happening in cervids in North America.
Let me tell them how the deer got infected. Mad cow was over here and generated in cattle by one simple mechanism, the feed the cows were being given. It included the ground-up brains of sheep, of cows. It's all protein, remember. Roadkill. You name it, and they would get, that's protein. So they would feed the cattle protein from all these sources. And scrapie in sheep is mad cow in sheep. So they fed the cattle this, and they'd go out in a pickup truck or whatever, and they'd dump a whole lot of it in the pastures for the cows to eat, to get extra nutrition, to get bigger. So when they went to market, they'd bring more money and so forth. Well, the deer showed up and began eating the same feed out in the pastures. This occurred in the eastern U.S. first. So the deer got it. And the deer, remember, infectious prion proteins are in all body fluids. And the deer began spreading it to one another through reproductive actions, through licking each other, through licking themselves. And somebody else came up and started licking that deer and got prions in the saliva from licking the other deer and got sick. The only thing the government will tell hunters who go out and harvest deer, to use a cliche, is that if you see a deer staggering around, probably not a good idea to shoot it and take it home and eat it. Probably not. And yes, there have been a lot of hunters who have died. How dangerous are these infectious prion proteins? There was a big elk farm in Canada. The guy was raising elk to harvest their antlers every year to sell to the Asian market as an aphrodisiac or whatever. Anyhow, his elk herd came down with, guess what? Mad cow disease. The Canadian government came in, the agricultural people, and went to the guy's farm and said, I'm sorry, but all your animals are going to be put down immediately and buried in a pit. They're not going to be harvested. They're going to be killed, and we're going to bury them. And the guy says, what do you mean? They said, you're out of business. This stuff spreads, and we have to stop it right here. So they killed all of his elk, buried them, on the farm, and they told him, you must now leave this property, sell it, whatever. You can no longer use this for any legitimate agricultural purpose. He says, you mean I can't raise canola oil or canola, the rapeseed plant, or raise wheat? And they said, no, you're out of business. This land is being quarantined permanently. He said, why? Because the mad cow prions were in the urine of the elk, and it's in the ground. And if you plant crops in there, those proteins, which talk about denaturing, they can last for almost ever. They come up in the grasses, and you'll harvest them, or the plants, or the crops, and other animals will eat the grass and get infected like the deer do in the wild, or the crops you raise will go off to market with prions in them from the elk you used to have here. And so the guy lost everything. That's a true story. So the deer got it from eating cattle feed, which was corrupted with the brains of sheep, which had scrapie, and or other beef products that were put in there, which had mad cow, BSE, TSE, scrapie in it from the sheep. It's all combined. And the deer began to spread it state to state. Last count, I think it's in 38 different states now that the wild deer population has CWD, chronic wasting disease, another clever name for mad cow. It's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. So 38 states, and it's moving west. It's not quite to Oregon and Washington yet, but I think it's in Idaho. I think it's in Utah. It's moved across the country in the deer population. It's spread. And it's spread again through reproduction. It's spread through licking. Deer lick each other. And that's another way it's commonly being vectored, licking.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and the frightening thing is that when they urinate or defecate in the land, soil, it can be uptaken by any plants that are growing that, and then they feed on those plants and keep that cycle going.
These are not viruses or bacteria. Think protein. Whole different critter. And they don't die easily. They can remain in the land and in the, I guess you'd call it an environmental cycle, for a long time. So,
you know, and that brings to mind, and we've talked about this a while back, about these liquid cremations that they're promoting now.
Whoops.
Using, I believe it's some kind of a lye, sodium hydroxide, to dissolve
it's
the
an
bodies.
Acid sort of a thing, and it dissolves all the tissues, yeah.
I think it's sodium hydroxide, but so they liquefy the remains, and then I believe they're advocating putting them into the ground, in, you know, fields, gardens.
They've been approved for ag use, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Fertilizer.
You better hope.
Yes, you better hope.
That is sufficient to denature these infectious proteins. I can't tell you how many people are coming into these amyloidosis groups right now. And now amyloidosis is a disease of protein misfolding. There's a lot of people that are going to be, if not dying outright from this disease process, dying with this disease. And then what becomes of their remains? I mean, you know, that is something
that merits
serious consideration.
The undiagnosed, the subclinical CJD cases, what about them?
Which I'm sure there's many, because how many people are dying of turbo cancer before CJD even manifests, possibly?
Exactly. And keep in mind, again, not trying to scare anybody, but these are scientific facts. These proteins are very durable. A dental or medical environment where they use autoclaves, which check in around 250 degrees Fahrenheit to sterilize instruments before they're used on the next patient, whether it's a surgical implement, a colonoscopy implement, a dental implement for scraping teeth, for example. If they go through a typical autoclave procedure at 250 degrees, they are not going to be free of infectious prion proteins.
That's
prion
right.
Proteins in a crematory, the human corpse is burned at around 650 degrees. Just I'm rounding it off. And that's how they do it. And all the liquids and all the other things basically go up the chimney, right? And mm-hmm. in the surrounding neighborhood, they come down here and there. That's just what they do. It's physics. So these prion proteins are burned up at 650 degrees. Do you know how much a temperature, in terms of Fahrenheit, a prion protein can withstand?
1,200, right?
Yeah.
1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. That's pretty hot. Very few furnaces get that hot.
Very few. So they're going up, even if they were to cremate people at 1,000 degrees, which I don't think happens. I know it used to be 650, 700. You're talking a 1,200 degree threshold here that these prion proteins can withstand, and they'll go right up and on out into the air. And potentially, you could breathe them. It's not saying we don't know what the dose. This is probably a dose dependency thing. We don't know how many you'd have before you really came down with CJD or mad cow in people. We don't know. No one knows that. It could be one. It could be 1,000. It could be 1,000,000. I don't know. But I know I wouldn't want it. That's why I mentioned last Friday I bought my own teeth cleaning utensils and kept them at the dental office. They were very happy to put mine away with my name on, you know, the wrapper. They put them in plastic after they clean them, because I didn't have any diseases I was worried about. But I don't want anybody sticking any other dental implement in my mouth that's been in 1,000 other people before me, because autoclaving is not going to sterilize them in terms of infectious prion proteins, and probably a lot more proteins as well.
That's right. That's right.
Here's just a little tiny bit of this video having to do with this woman in France who was simply working on prions in the lab.
Hey everybody, this is Robert and welcome to Outbreak News TV. Now today I want to go over a story about a researcher that was working in a lab in France who in 2010 accidentally poked herself with an instrument that was contaminated with a material that had prion on it. The the protein, infectious protein, that can cause a variety of different diseases in humans and animals. Then come 9 years later in 2019, the young lady died. And I want to tell her story and what's behind behind the scenes of the whole thing.
Okay, well, we're running short on time here. I'll post this. You'll see it labeled later on tonight. It's an interesting story, but the bottom line is they were working on prions, infecting mice, and then they examined the mice brains and see what was being transmitted and so forth, and she poked herself. They call it commonly needle stick in the lab setting, and it killed her. Didn't take many prions to kill her, just a few.
Well, and I think she was, you know, had no symptoms for 9 years.
That's a normal gestation for CJD, before the shots, the age of the shots, the injections. Normally, a normal gestation period, my understanding, is around 9-10 years.
Yeah.
Let me look it up.
I mean,
this
must be just awful living with that hanging over your head.
I couldn't even imagine. The incubation period for VCJD after foodborne exposure. What is foodborne exposure? If you eat a mad cow burger, for example, or a piece of venison which has CWD in it, for example, the incubation period for VCJD after foodborne exposure is thought to be around 10 years. No vaccine or treatment is available. Most reported VCJD cases appear to have been infected through the consumption of bovine meat products contaminated with the agent of BSE, bovine spongiform encephalopathy. That's a 2017 update. So it's here. It's in the system. It takes 10 years for CJD to show up in people. Now, if we're seeing people getting injected and within 2 weeks they're diagnosed with CJD, what does that tell you? It tells you that there's something new going on here with this prion protein. Very, very bad news.
Well, again, we have to kind of correlate what we're seeing clinically in people with what is being researched and published. And, you know, it looks like that is the manifestation of this spike insert or prion insert in the spike protein in the vaccine. Now, don't forget, in the Pfizer vaccine, there, that unknown open reading frame 19 had another 13 prion domains in it.
Oh, it was something horrible. And they didn't get there by accident. Remember Bob Strecker? The guy in the wheelchair didn't dress himself in a tuxedo. He was an amputee. So these things were put in there. And Erica just said, why? Well, three guesses. You only get one.
It has nothing to do with protecting people from COVID.
Calling this a vaccine, it remains one of the gravest disservices that any of the experts can dish out to the public. It is not a vaccine. Whatever was behind the creation of this thing, it was so incredibly evil that I just don't even have words for it. And I apologize in advance. We don't want to scare you. We want you to know the truth so you can minimize any risks, any risky behavior you may be engaging in. All right? Sex is not something you want to do with people, unless you know them for a long time and you're both of the same vax status. We've had too many people who have been had their lives ruined by having sex with their vaxxed opposite.
Even, under the same roof, living together, cohabitating together under the same roof has adversely affected people's health, unvaxxed people's health.
Well, ask Lori. The 10-minute car ride or 15-minute car
ride,
she gave her two vaxxed neighbors, And that's 2.5 years ago now, I guess. She's still sick. All right, here we've got, I think we can get through these. We have three stories about, or should we wait till Wednesday?
We can wait.
Let's hold these off because they are really worth discussing. So we have a whole lot of material for you Wednesday. I think we brought you pretty well up to speed on prions. And the big concern, though, now is that people who have been injected with the bioweapon are manifesting fully diagnosable CJD within a matter of weeks or months. This is not good news.
You know, and that one that we read on Friday, one of those people said that she was diagnosed, I believe, on November 17 and then died early December, just, you know, literally a few days ago. But that as of the end of October, she was still perfectly healthy or outwardly healthy. So the symptoms came on fast and followed by her demise very, very quickly.
Sound like turbo
cancer?
As I said,
you know, it's really a feat that she received a diagnosis in such a short time, because most people would be left to flounder. And of course, if this is still a presumptive diagnosis, because you can really only confirm it at autopsy and looking at the brain, but between clinical symptoms and whatever testing is currently available, I guess they can pretty much rule other things out and arrive at a diagnosis of CJD. And I'm guessing they're seeing a lot more of it right now, so they're getting used to it.
Right. I agree. I speak just for myself. The American beef industry is under enough of a cloud right now. It's in trouble. The global elite want to remove meat from the menu, okay? Personally, I don't eat meat, so it doesn't bother me. But the beef industry here has been very diligent about staying all over this BSE, bovine spongiform encephalopathy crisis, since it first burst out in the UK. It's all about business and money and not about reality. And when that guy at the slaughterhouse told me, he said, Jeff, we get these kind of cows in here often. They can't walk, and we have to drag them over to the slaughterhouse with a backhoe.
Mm.
He was fired, of course, right away. But I the man was telling the truth, and I think
it
is.
The beef industry is huge.
It's mega billions, and I think honestly it has always been in the industry. I would also suggest that it is these prions or proteins. They certainly could be in the dairy products, they could be in the milk from the cow, which is used to make a lot of other things. And remember, these proteins are very, very durable. It takes 1,200 degrees to kill them, to denature them. So it's all right. We've laid out a lot of material this hour. I understand. I hope it was understandable. Listen to the program again. The deer have it now from the cattle feed given to the cows, which included brains of sheep and other cows that had mad cow and mad deer disease. I'm sure that was in there too. And the deer ate it, and the deer have it now. And it's being transmitted by often licking, I'm sure, in the deer populace, and then the act of reproduction, body fluid transmission. So
yeah, it does seem as though the most effective mode of transmission, at least for those diseases, is ingesting it.
Agreed.
So.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, we covered a lot of ground. We did much more on this than I thought we were going to do, but it all goes back to the 1969 House Subcommittee hearing on biological weapons that were designed to destroy the human immune system. Understand? That's when it started, and that's exactly what these bioweapons do now. They destroy your blood, they destroy your immune competence, and 50 other things that are anti-life. This is a monstrosity of a shot.
It is. All right. Really is.
Okay, great job. Thank you. Good night, partner. Talk
okay.
to you soon.
Right. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
All right, we will be back with more in just a few minutes, and we'll have this program posted later this evening. So share it. Think about it. This goes back to my research on HIV and the book and how HIV was spread. It's the same kind of overlay. Back in a few minutes. Hold on.